from KQED. Hey everyone, from KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos.
And I'm Guy Marzorati, in this week for Scott Schaefer. And today we have with us a woman who's poised to make history as California's first Muslim and Afghan-American state legislator. She's declared victory in a district representing parts of the Bay Area in the state Senate.
That is right. Aisha Wahab is here with us. She will talk about her path to office and what she hopes to do in Sacramento. But first, Guy, a historic announcement today from Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
That's right. We heard from Pelosi on the House floor this morning announcing she will stay in Congress, but not in leadership. So she'll continue to represent San Francisco, but obviously a historic day. She's already going to hand over the speaker gavel, but will not be the Democratic leader going forward. And I thought, you know, listening to her remarks, obviously making reference to the work that she's done with three of the four presidents that she's worked with, but really a forward-looking address. She talked about unfinished business. She referenced serving kids who were born today who will be living into the next century. Clearly a theme in her work.
It's all about the children.
About winning and the children.
Right.
So you've talked to a lot of her colleagues in the House and California's delegation. What have you been hearing today?
I mean, from Democrats, just unrelenting praise. You know, they're heaping praise on her. I've had now multiple people, including Congresswoman Barbara Lee, call her the best speaker ever. And it's true. I mean, I think in recent history, at least, you can say that she has, on either side of the aisle, done a better job of holding the caucus together, of, you know, if not winning, at least performing better than expected, like in this year's election. But perhaps the most remarkable thing, Guy, is that she is sticking around. I think
right.
There had been a lot of speculation that she would not want to be in the minority at all, and certainly not want to hang out and be not in leadership.
Pause the replacement derby. Put a halt on the for now, maybe.
Well, maybe. I mean, there's already speak that Hakeem Jeffries from New York will be among leaders, and Pete Aguilar.
Oh, I mean, of for Pelosi's seat, I think that was already starting to percolate. Locally.
That is for sure. Yes, I think Scott Wiener in particular, her daughter Christine Pelosi, all have their eyes on that seat. Potentially former Supervisor Jane Kim. So. They're going to have to keep it local for now.
So now it's a fellow Californian who's going to, you know, potentially take the gavel next year, Kevin McCarthy. But it's going to be a pretty slim House majority. You found out this week Republicans will gain control of the House. But there are still a few seats here in California that we're watching, particularly in the Central Valley. And I think why the margins matter is with a caucus that has shown itself as kind of fractious as Republicans have. All of those votes are going to matter for potential Speaker Kevin McCarthy. So we're at this point really watching the David Valadao, Rudy Salas race by Kern County. Valadao still holds a lead. And then Adam Gray and John Duarte really close, kind of going back and forth every day with the vote counts.
That's another Central Valley
race.
Central Valley. And we are still waiting for a couple of those SoCal races, but it doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of changing hands in California of congressional seats, which is fascinating. We should also mention, winner was called in Los Angeles. Karen Bass will be the first Black woman to lead that giant city. And sort of, I'm sure, big disappointment for Rick Caruso, who spent over $100 million of his own money. What do you think is going through his head right now? Or do you think it doesn't matter if you're a billionaire?
You know, I think he got that race a lot closer than maybe some folks predicted at the onset. And the late votes, as we saw, like have broken progressive in a lot of these cases in a strong fashion for Karen Bass. It seemed like her vote count was growing every day after Election Day. And we also got a mayoral result in San Jose, Matt Mahan winning this week. County Supervisor Cindy Chavez conceding that race. So it's really Oakland, as far as big city mayoral races left in California, still really neck and neck between Lauren Taylor and Sheng Tao. That's a ranked choice contest. I think after Cindy Chavez losing in the South Bay, Labor, like Sheng Tao going down, would be two really high-profile defeats in mayoral contests. So that's really the top thing we'll be watching. We had district attorney in San Francisco decided this week. Brooke Jenkins will get a new term. So we're getting to the end. Marisa, they're going to wrap up by Thanksgiving. That's
Are
all
they?
We can Are be
they
thankful
guy?
For.
Okay. Well, there's still, as we said, some congressional races outstanding. We will continue to keep an eye on those. For now, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will chat with Hayward City Council member Aisha Wahab. She's going to the Senate, we think. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
I'm Jonathan Hill, host of The Weeds. And I know that politics can feel like a joke, and not always in the ha-ha funny way. On The Weeds, we try to split the difference.
When you think run out of money, you think that we're gonna get to a point where like one guy retires and Social Security is like, sorry y'all, gotta board up.
Like that's it. Sorry, he got the last check.
I always call him Jim. Like, Jim got it. Sorry y'all, he got the last check and that's all the checks we got and Social Security is no more.
Check out The Weeds every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos, here today with Guy Marzorati, and we are thrilled to welcome Aisha Wahab. She is a city council member in the East Bay City of Hayward and very likely to be the next state senator representing District 10, which stretches from Hayward to Sunnyvale in the Bay Area. Aisha, welcome to The Breakdown.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're thrilled to have you, and we should say we're taping this Wednesday. Votes are literally coming in right now. But you do have a pretty strong lean, and I guess first question is, like, how has it been waiting? Because this is not a unique experience to your campaign. So many candidates are out there days, I don't know,
our
weeks
guest,
after.
We should say our guest last week, Will Rollins, was running for Congress, also waiting. He lost. So if you lose, it's our apologies. This show is cursed.
No.
We're in the lead. We're in good shape.
Is it stressful? Are you like sleeping with your phone sort of like taped to your face?
Okay,
like,
so you know what is very different from these elections to, let's say, 4 years ago for city council even, is that these elections, everyone gets their ballot a month early, right? So everyone has their ballot. And you almost want results day by day since the ballot drops, but that's not how it works, right? So you wait that whole month in anxiety, and then that Tuesday night, and nothing is really fully counted, right? So you just kind of, yes, anxious, your family's anxious, everyone's texting you, people are asking you questions, you're trying to do the math. Ours is a little bit more difficult too, because we cross over two
counties, yeah.
Right? And so we're trying to do the math, add it up, figure out how many ballots are left out. You know, it's a little more complicated than most.
Math. Did you get into politics to do math?
You know, the budget is a big math problem sometimes.
But then there's all this other stuff like hiring staff, you know, figuring out the lay of the land in the Capitol that's kind of in a weird hiatus for you, I assume. Is it basically just like, show up December 5th and vote on the oil windfall tax?
No. You know, it's actually funny. I came from orientation this morning. So I was asked to come in, and, you know, there's going to be a part two for me just because a lot of the senators that actually, you know, it was very clearly they won early on. So they already got their training. So I'm a little, to be honest with you, catching up. And so there's a little anxiety there. I'd have to quit my job, like give my formal notice once this is all said and done. So when you work somewhere for many, many years, you kind of feel a little, you know, different emotions, right? So you're excited, nervous, a little scared of the new thing. And at the same time, you're a bittersweet type of vibe for leaving as well, right? But today was orientation. You know, you're talking about hiring people. Honestly, one of my biggest concerns were that, you know, how do I retain talent in the Bay Area when their salaries aren't as competitive?
In the legislature compared to.
Especially for the amount of work that is expected. You know, you have weekend nights, you know, a lot of reading, a lot of policy, a lot of this and that. And, you know, they said that it's actually one of their biggest problems as well is retaining people. Yeah. And that's why you see so many people that almost look like they just got fresh out of college in these roles. Right. So we definitely want to retain some top talent, have some aggressive policies pushing forward. And, you know, it's a learning curve for sure.
Yeah.
But so was Hayward.
All right. Well, let's go back to the beginning, your beginning. Mm-hmm. You were born in New York. And I mentioned that at the beginning, you were, I think, one of two first Afghan-Americans elected when you were elected to the city council. But what brought your birth parents from Afghanistan to New York?
You know, my parents, they left Afghanistan because of the Soviet invasion, right? It's something we are constantly dealing with right now in the news as well. You know, Ukrainian refugees are dealing with this. Mm-hmm. So they were genuinely looking for a better life and seeking political asylum. They came to New York City, as so many Americans have done. But obviously, they weren't able to fulfill their American dream, if you will.
Hmm. And I know your father was murdered when I think you were pretty young at the time.
Shortly after I was born, yes.
After you were born. Like, would you know anything about the circumstances or kind of what do you know about his murder?
I know it was an act of violence. You know, it's a cold case. I've actually trying to figure out, you know, if there's any additional information. And granted, it's been, you know, 30 plus years. And, you know, cold cases, they're still technically open, so they don't actually give you a lot of information.
Was it like a street crime?
Yes, okay. Right. And so... you know, a lot of the detectives that I spoke to said that we can't give you any more information than this. And they have a cold case section. And it's very hard to do all of this, like from the Bay Area to New York, right? And so, you know, it is what it is. You know, we've learned a lot from it. It's really deeply affected our lives, you know, considering that it happened 30 years ago and it's left its mark on both my sister and I. So, I really do prioritize victims' rights because it's not just the individual that was affected, but even all the people around them and potentially for a longer period of time than just that particular action, as well as, you know, holding offenders accountable. So I'm pretty strong on that particular piece of it.
Yeah, I've done a lot of reporting on that, and I know there's still a lot of work to do around survivors' rights. So you have an older sister then?
She's
a little older than you. And then your mother died not long after that, right? I mean, you guys were still pretty young.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, because, you know, this all happened when I was extremely little, right? I don't know all the details except for a lot of what was been told to me. Some of the stuff that's in my case files, things like that. My mother passed away as well. I've heard, you know, different things about how that happened.
How old were you?
I don't even know.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the part that I'm still very unclear about. And, you know, I will say it still leaves a mark on you. You know, it's very tough. But at the same time, I'm very fortunate to have been adopted with my sister, which is, you know, I'm sure if you've, you know, done some research on the foster care system, is very rare as well, especially since she was my
older
sister.
And by an Afghan family, right?
Yes, yes, yes. So I was very fortunate. Knock on wood. You know, I lived with some foster families. I grew up with a Black foster family in particular in this area in the Bay. And grew up going to church in the whole nine and eventually adopted. And I think that the state of California, the state of New York and, you know, the counties all try to make a concerted effort to, you know, place us with the, you know, culturally similar families.
So what are your memories of coming here to California, growing up here in California? I think you grew up in Fremont. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. What's funny is you know, I don't know how old I was, but all I remember is the cold of New York, right? I know as a kid here, especially in foster care, our foster family was a decent family. You know, everyone has their pros and cons. And I remember Christmas in particular. I remember even my third grade birthday, right, where I tied my own shoe. I remember dealing with the social worker a lot, going to the doctors a lot, and riding my little tricycle, if you will, right? And then I even remember, you know, kind of meeting our new family, if you will, right? So that, you know, as a kid, you don't really understand it, right?
Yeah. How old were you?
I think under 10,
okay.
But not 100% sure exactly what age. But I just, you know, because for example, my parents who've raised me, my dad will always say, you learned, you know, your native tongue, your mother's tongue, if you will, because you thought the dog only spoke that because they spoke, you know, Farsi to the dog. And I'm trying to, like, you know, say, come here. But, you know, things like that. So I've always been a dog lover. And that's another big thing that, you know, is very big part of my childhood, if you will.
Yeah. So did you feel stability after you guys got adopted? And I mean, it sounds like you refer to them as your family.
Yeah. No, my parents, you know, I think they did a, you know, I'm going to say decent job. I think that, you know, there's a lot of taboo about adoption, right? It's a lot of taboo, especially with tribal families and you know, old cultures, you know, that do care about bloodlines and things like that. So it's not always easy. There's a lot of, you know, descriptive words we can use that, you know, we'll just ignore at this moment. But it is difficult in some regard. But for the most part, it allowed me to at least understand that, you know, one, I'm Afghan, you know, because I was primarily living with a black family, right? And so understanding the cultural differences, we both, my sister and I, really didn't understand race as much as maybe other people did until we were in high school, realistically, right? And when 9/11 happened, you know, my father was like, you know, you have to understand where you come from, how people see you, things like that, because people use it against you. And so I learned a lot through that.
Yeah, I was going to say that must have been kind of an awakening of, you know, you're Afghan now, right? That suddenly becomes something that, you know, people at school, friends realize. What was that like, both the 9/11 and then the invasion, the years, yeah, you know, the years since?
Yeah, you know, I really honestly didn't really understand, you know, the impact. You know, I saw the video just like everybody else did in the Bay Area. You know, you see the catastrophe that on a human level, right? You see the buildings destroyed, you see all of that, but you know, you don't understand why people are automatically blaming, you know, people that look like you or from the region or anything like that. And we know that Afghans were not involved in this, right? And so, you know, you're just trying to understand it just as much as anybody else, but you're also a kid too, so you still don't understand the weight that it had in this world and in our generation, right? So this was our generation's Pearl Harbor, right? Let's be honest about that, right? And so it's, you know, but I'll be honest, when I go and talk to students in schools and I bring this up, I had students ask me, what is 9/11? So and I was like, okay, I feel very old at this moment,
yeah,
right? Because the fact that some kids haven't learned it yet.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, for
I mean,
us,
I've had to explain it to my kids. Yeah, it's fine. I'm like, wow. And then I'm like, wait a second. Yeah, my kids are six and nine. They don't know.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, what year were you born again? Yeah. Right. And you know, you realize that they're a lot younger than you. So, it's been, you know, I always take it as chapters in your life. Right. You learn things. You move on, and then you also turn the page. Right. Because you have to continue to grow, continue to learn, and continue to you know, see the next chapter, if you will.
So I know your adopted family had a family business, and I think you worked there, and it was hit really hard during the Great Recession. Talk about your experience, you know, working at, was it a shop?
Yeah. So it was a retail. It was largely retail. Honestly, it's back-breaking work, right? Working retail. I give kudos to everybody that has ever worked in customer
service.
Everyone
should work in retail.
Yes. You know, you learn very quickly.
They didn't have you in the cashier spot. They had you...
I've done it all. Okay. Just because it's, you know, a family business. You kind of... And I actually expanded my parents' business in multiple cities at the time, right? And
what were you all selling?
Everything from like accessories to shoes to, you know, handbags, you name it, like was pretty much across the board, right? And, you know, my mother's family had a lot of businesses as well. So like it was kind of like a small business kind of family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you learn everything. Physical labor is there. Small businesses, there are no real rules, right? You don't take a 30-minute break, an hour lunch, you know, things like that. None of that exists, right?
Especially not if you're the kid.
Yeah, you're working 12 hours. We worked, both my sister and I will say my sister probably worked more. And it does build a work ethic. Every weekend, every summer, every holiday, we were working, right? I see that now, and it's amazing work. You know, my dad, for example, always put us in a position where he goes, I want you guys to really know how it is to work with everyday people all the time at every level. And I do believe that I've learned that. I know my sister has as well. And it also makes you constantly, because if you're an entrepreneur, you are constantly motivated to pursue the next goal, right? Whatever that may be. So I see that in my own, you know, capacity as well.
So how did that all translate into a desire to get into public office?
Right.
I know, obviously, the business was hit hard by the Great Recession. I think you all ended up losing your home during those years. So was that a factor in, like, ultimately pushing you into public service?
Yeah, you know, at that time, I was working at my parents' spot on the weekends, and then I also held down a full-time job Monday through Friday while I was going to school. So I paid my way the entire time, but you know, the economy was starting to tank. My parents were a little bit more strapped for cash, so I was helping significantly. And, you know, retail's the first to go. When you're thinking about cutting back, you're, okay, I don't need that. I don't want that. You know, I shouldn't buy that. So That's what really happened. And we saw the decline over a course of so many years. Gentrification also changed the clientele, which, you know, a lot of people don't talk about, but it does hurt the community as well. And then housing has become obviously an issue, and millions of Americans lost their home. It's not just my family, right? And when you take a look at that, you know, having to downsize so quickly, right? And it causes obviously personal tensions. And, you know, my parents eventually divorced and the whole nine. And you take a look at that and you see, okay, what can I do? I was laid off eventually. I was hired back like 6 months later or something like that. But, you know, you kind of change that chapter again, as I always kind of give a reference to. And, you know, you're thinking, okay, what can I do? How can I better myself? How can I make myself more marketable? Things like that. I went and got my master's, right, in business. And the economy was still down. It was very hard to find a job under a political science degree. I'm just going to be very frank about that to my political science majors. And eventually, I was attending meetings. Trump got elected. And I was always involved throughout my childhood to my adulthood, involved in community service. That's a big core issue in my family, from winter coat drives to, you know, Afghan orphan kids to food drives here locally. You name it, we did it, right? So that was never a problem, you know, volunteering for campaigns, things like that. It was always an interest. But the more I got involved, and then when I saw, you know, Trump just basically, you know, I'm going to say destroy a lot of the fabric of our society, of respect, of dignity, of inclusion, if, you know, you name it. I felt that I needed to get more involved because my city council wasn't reacting to some of the problems that were happening in our city, like housing, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I want to talk about housing, but if you're just joining us, you are listening to Political Breakdown from KQED. I'm Marisa Lagos here with Guy Marzorati. Our guest is Hayward City Councilmember Aisha Wahab, who appears headed to the state Senate. So you just mentioned housing, and I think that's a great segue because you are considered the more lefty progressive candidate. You come from, you know, Hayward, Fremont, Milpitas, these places that have been seen as, you know, really sort of the crux of a suburban life in the Bay Area. And housing is a huge flashpoint, right? NIMBYism, this question. Like, what is happening when folks like you and Alex Lee are doing so well?
I'm a
there?
Voter in the district. You won, Alex Lee won. Like, what's happening?
Yeah, what is the deal?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily that our politics are identical. And I think that, you know, when we slap labels like progressive and things like that, we put people in a box, right? And that was actually one of my biggest frustrations in Sacramento, is that they didn't actually look at the policy. They looked at the labels, right? And it's easy to call somebody who's a person of color and relatively younger than the average, you know, elected official and say, okay, progressive category, right? I have a business background. I've been very, very careful to thread the needle on the actual issues, right? So whether it's housing, whether it's public safety, whether it's whatever, I move the ball forward, right? But I also make sure that everybody's included, everybody's at the table, and everybody agrees. So my policies have passed unanimously, right? Whether we're talking about independent investigation for police officers or the complete removal of mental health and homeless calls from PD and given to our paramedics, or housing at all income levels and more affordable housing and rent stabilized.
So you think
units.
You're talking about this in a different way? Because, like, y'all brought a navigation center to your city at a time when that was a real hot button issue. Like, how are you talking to voters who may not have historically been supportive of building more affordable
Most
housing?
Most people demonize homeless individuals, yeah. Right? The unhoused population actually are working poor. Many of them actually have veterans assistance, Social Security, some disability, whatever the case is, they are earning. And it's not just a development issue when, you know, people like to talk about build. It's really not that. It's also an affordability crisis. So if we have in Alameda County about 9,000, you know, 747 homeless individuals and 30,000 vacant units, we can house those people, right? So what are we doing? What is an area that we are not focused on, right? And so when I talk about it in like this with data, with facts, and not demonizing the opposite or opposing side or whoever yeah. as the other, people understand it in a different way.
I know you've talked about, you know, threading the needle, bringing a small business lens to the state legislature, but the Chamber of Commerce, businesses, they spent millions of dollars to try to make sure you will not win this seat. So I guess what's the difference voters would be getting with a candidate like yourself who brings that kind of labor backing into this versus, you know, your opponent in that race who did get a lot of endorsements and money from folks like the Chamber of Commerce. Like, what's going to change?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was very disappointed seeing the amount of money that was flooded this race. But number two is also the fact that I believe that they were deeply misguided and misinformed, right? And the honest truth about big business, and we're talking about big business.
Okay, so that's the difference.
Yeah, there's a clear separation of small businesses versus big business, right? Small businesses are the moms and pops that we go to for like getting a donut or getting your nails done or things like that. Big business or industries that can pay for lobbyists that really don't play by the same rules, don't pay taxes, and are constantly looking to kind of get an extra dollar squeezed out of something, right? So I believe that they don't want to be held accountable. And it's not one industry. It's across the board, right? And you saw PG&E put in a lot of money there. Why, right? When, you know, you see some of the disasters that are happening in our state because of faulty work or, you know, the lack of, you know, taking a look at how the environment is working and so forth. Housing, right? I'm actually very pro-development, but also, what are we developing? How are we developing? How does it affect our community? So many different other questions that are not being asked by your average elected official, right? So I think that there's a clear difference there. I do want to work with everybody. I want to hear their side, but I also want them to be held accountable and understand that we are one community. We do have to help each other kind of, you know, succeed.
Yeah. Well, assuming the numbers hold and you take the Senate seat, you will be sworn in and immediately potentially thrown into this special session on an oil windfall profit tax. The governor hasn't even put out a fact sheet yet, so I'm not expecting a vote in a couple weeks, but there will be a conversation. And as Guy mentioned, business plays big, and it's not just – it doesn't break along Republicans versus Democrats because there's so many Democrats. There's a lot of folks in Sacramento – especially from districts like in the Central Valley where oil has played big because those are big jobs there. I'm just curious, like, how you would approach that. Like, it's a big ask to get to 2/3 on a tax vote at the beginning of a legislative session. How would you talk to, you know, a colleague who may be worried about the jobs in their district, but, you know, is also concerned about climate change?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that for first and foremost, we need all the facts, right? You know, you can't just, you know, just because you think you know something, right? You need to see the facts. You need to be able to ask questions. Your colleagues, you know, as much as they care about the jobs in their district, I care about the jobs in their district, right? Because at the end of the day, it's, you know, the policies we make is for all of California, not just our district, right? So we really need to have that full statewide lens, number one. Number two is, you know, when we talk about equity issues, a lot of those jobs are unionized. They have a lot of usually lower income individuals that have historically moved into that industry to be able to obtain a six-figure job and support their families, right? I fully support that, right? But how do we get those industries to move into a cleaner energy, right? Cleaner technology, cleaner usage of, you know, some you know, new effort, if you will, right? How do you get them to invest? So I think that I would just work with my colleagues to understand their fears and kind of see if we can kind of incorporate that into policy, right? Which is the whole goal of a state senator.
Yeah.
Finally, before we wrap up and let you go, what do you do for fun? And what are you going to be doing for some relaxation in the, I don't know, few weeks you have before it's right up to business in Sacramento?
So we're being trained right now, so it's, I wouldn't say it's relaxation time right now, even though it's, you know, Thanksgiving and so forth is coming up. Honestly, I kind of want to catch up on some movies that I haven't been able to watch, right? Big movie buff, really, really enjoy that. And so
what's your number one choice that you haven't gotten to see yet?
I haven't seen the Black Panther movie. Right. I know that's
Wakanda Forever.
Yeah, I do want to. I was going to call it Wakanda Forever. Right. I have not seen that yet. And it's around this time that all the Oscar nominated films kind of slowly come out. So I do want to spend a lot of time just watching movies.
All right. That is Aisha Wahab, the potentially soon senator elect from District 10. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And that's going to do it for this edition of Political Breakdown. We're a production of KQED Public Radio. Guy's our producer, and our engineers are Seal Muller and Chris Hoff.
I'm Guy Marzorati.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. See you next time.